Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Wednesday stream.
Hello.
You didn't miss one. We didn't do one on Monday because we were both busy and a bit sick.
Do you know what
So,
that means, though?
what?
It means we're back.
We're back. We're back. No, it also means I actually remember what day it is as well, which is a good thing.
Yes, that is Wednesday, my dudes.
It is. For those waiting for the weather report,
It's
it's
pissing it down.
been pissing it down for about a month. It's been awful, to be honest. Apparently, we're having all these heat waves and the world's about to end, but nope. All we get is it fucking pissing it down here. So, yeah, lovely.
There was no stream on Monday because I was a bit useless and not in the best nick, and you were a bit tired as well. And we sort of think sometimes that it's for the best we don't just do these for the sake of them, especially if we've got an important topic to cover. We
Yes.
want to be able to put our full ability behind it, as it were.
We cancel streams for the greater good. The
Yes,
greater good.
agree to good.
But I do see James Murray there, returning members. Not sure, and Coney Current Year. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome, everybody.
Oh, Alfred the Great's got the right idea. A pint of Theakston's, anyone?
Yes,
We'll need
exactly.
to get
Exactly
a Theakston's
correct. Well,
emoji on
we'll need to get
the
a.
members thing if we can get another slot at some
We
point.
probably will do, and memberships are growing pretty well, which does bring me on to the usual shilling, which is that we have
The
full
full.
monetization somehow on YouTube still.
Yes, so there are super chats and super stickers, but not everyone wants to pay the Google tax. So you can give to us on the Ko-fi page thing. I refuse to say coffee. I don't know how else to pronounce it, really. I might just start calling it the Kofi Annan page or something.
The Kofi Annan page. You can support us on the Kofi Annan page. I'm not gonna shill too hard today. There is a couple of new ways to support us. You can do the regular donations, and I've set up a couple of just commissions here. I'm not quite sure if anyone will ever use those. But I've got a dedicated kind of update about what we're doing, because we have also, as some people who already subscribe know, we have also expanded what we're doing on our Substack, which is where all our written content is. We're trying to turn that into a fully fledged backup, really, for paying subscribers. So we'll be uploading all of our streams going forward there as a podcast. And also, we have a section here of research notes. Basically, I've edited together, made them as readable as possible, the raw notes for our streams, and we
And
have like literally 70 of them here.
yes, there is almost like, if you were to actually culminate it, probably about 1,000 hours worth of research that you can garner out of these.
Yes, so a lot of people have been asking about these. We used to put them in the community posts and the pinned comment, but I think YouTube either changed their maximum character limit or our notes just got too big. Either way, that became unviable. So
Yes.
now we have both that and our show as a podcast on the Substack as kind of an extra backup vertical, and also a trove of research notes that goes with them. So I put out a free one. This one's a free one. And you also see here that we've got the research notes and also the video. But if you want to listen to it in audio format, it's already there, because I know that a lot of people don't like the fact
Basically,
that YouTube.
if you don't want to pay for the fancy YouTube premium and you just want our stuff without adverts in a way that you could also download, I believe, or put into your weird RSS feed if you've still got one of those, this is probably the way to go about it. And now that we've got the free bloody commie, no, it's not free. None of it's free.
Well, this stuff's kind of, well, it's to be fair, it's not free. Freedom. It does take folks like you and me. But we do have quite a lot to get through today.
Indeed, we do.
As we talked about, this is, well, as we've not talked about yet, this is the immigration policy trap. We're following on from some of our streams about kind of policy wonks, how policy is made, and basically how the Tory sausage gets put into the shape that it is.
Yes, I mean, we've constantly been accruing stuff that's been immigration related for like well over a year at this point, and some of us made it into streams, but we've never really had the opportunity to tackle the whole thing in one go, and we're not really going to be able to do that again either this evening. But there has been a lot of, or at least a number of things that have come from some think tanks that we only recently covered a couple weeks ago,
Yeah.
who just happened to release all this documentation of immigration, And then they've had quite a sort of forward public campaign from all sorts of different aspects of the Tory octopus, as we refer to it now.
Yes.
That has essentially bolstered both the policy exchange document and all the policies that are going to be developed from that. So that gives at least some kind of context to talk about an element of it, which is the way in which the response by our elites today is being framed, who it actually relates to, and what it's actually going to do in terms of having any effect, which might be none, if not make things worse.
Yes, there is a lot of policy haggling going on right now. I know a lot of our viewers are in the UK, but also a decent chunk of them aren't. But if you are in the UK, you know that the news cycle has been consumed with a lot of immigration talk.
Small boats, small boats.
Yes, there's been a laser focus on the small boats. We'll get to that in kind of later on in the stream. But the environment is that something needs to be done about immigration, in quotes, from both parties. Mm-hmm. We talked about that in our political switcheroo stream. We talked about that during our kind of like dedicated immigration stream a while ago about the Becoming a Minority framework.
Yes.
And we've talked about it somewhat when we did performative failure. But we haven't really done a dedicated immigration policy stream for quite a while. And really, a lot of the documents that came out kind of last week were some of the perfect things, were some of the perfect people involved to prove what we were saying.
Yes.
Because our talking points from the previous three streams, basically days after we talked about them, breached into the headlines with the exact people we were talking about featured in them.
Yes.
So it's kind of a perfect worked example of, look, our instincts were correct on this. We can show you in real time how like rhetoric is manufactured, how consent is manufactured, and things like that. It's again, though, we have a lot of background, not a lot. We have a bit of background to go through first. So I'll briefly remind you of the current immigration system, current immigration situation, and the kind of the controversies therein. We've got, what is it, 1.1 million from, I believe it was a June to June delta.
Well, this is one that's to do with the visas.
Yes.
And the one I know you've closed it, but the little snippet I found interesting in that article.
Yeah.
Is that of the 1.1 million, only 64,700 of the grants in the most recent year are to EU citizens.
Yes.
Now, that means that 1.05 million are people who are literally coming from anywhere else.
Yes.
I mean, I know this has sort of become an obvious point, but it really goes to show what the immigration we experience nowadays is made up of. It's not Germans coming over for work. It's not French people coming over to study something. It's not folk coming over from Spain to launch some business. It's people coming from third world countries who are so different from us that there's just no way that civilization is incommunicable. This is an agreed upon point, but it becomes even more incommunicable when those people start to get further and further and further away. With the exception of the other one.
It was only 64,700 are EU citizens, yes. It seems that as a punishment for voting the wrong way, the British people were saddled with an even lower class of migrants.
Yep.
And here's the numbers. This has actually been revised up when we got to the end of 2022 to 1.4 million. So that number is lower. But again, just kind of a quick, rapid fire here. Repatriations are also at all-time lows. Deportations from the UK at record lows. Asylum applications. So again, this is The Guardian. Also confirmed that small boats, huge jump from 8,400. It's a small boats narrative once again. But they talk about the fact that...
Yeah, look at that one there.
Yeah.
Scroll up for a second.
Yeah.
Figures released on Thursday show that 2,380 people were forcibly returned to another country in the year to September 2021, a 35% yearly drop and the lowest number on record. In 2004, the Home Office deported 21,000 people. Now, that's at a period where 100,000 people, 120,000 people were coming in a year, at least according to the statistics. So you're talking about 1/5 to 1/6 of the people coming in were being deported, at least across the year.
Well, that's also being turned away at ports as well.
And now we have a situation where it's 2%, if not lower.
we've got the headline figures here. This is total enforced returns. In December 2012, it was up at about 15,000. And by, let's say, December 2019, so they can't really blame all the lockdowns that they did, it's just over 7,000. So it has more than half without all the lockdowns rubbish. But it gets even worse than that, because 9 in 10 people refuse asylum in 2020, free to remain in UK. Home Office criticises figures show 3,632 applications were turned down. So that's that number here. This is applications turned down. This isn't actually enforced returns. So that number's just a lie.
The Guardian doing some really good right-wing journalism for us there.
Of which only 314 were returned. Obviously, they're trying to bolster Starmer as immigration man, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, 314 is a staggeringly low number, especially when we have, as we saw, 1.4 million people entering the UK in 2022. It has since jumped back up slightly, but only slightly. And in fact, it may have gone down below that number for 2022. We're not quite sure. Or yes. It might be below the number 2023 because of all the courts wrangling around the Rwanda stuff we talked about during the performative failure stream. Thank you for the £5 there. Loaf of Sheffield. To be spent on beer if it helps. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Yes, cheers. Cheers to you too.
Cheers.
I'll quickly go through here. I don't want to sign your petition, but...
I think this was another point you brought up just to kind of show where the situation is demographics wise. Let's just go to the first paragraph there.
Yeah.
UK is already a crowded country. Our population is growing rapidly and is also being significantly changed by immigration at a much faster rate than has been generally understood. Indeed, 90% of growth since 2017 has been driven by immigration and subsequent children.
90%. I just we've been over these before. 8 million, 90% of that is immigrant led.
There was I can't remember if this is something we were going to feature at some point in this stream or otherwise, but there was a massive push by both Tony Blair and David Cameron, like 2005, 2006, not only to curb immigration, but essentially have a population cap of 70 million.
Yes.
And now we know today that that's not even slightly surpassed. They have blown that out of the water because we're probably talking about a country or group of countries that has maybe nearly 90 million people in it.
Anyway,
a third of which is probably foreign.
We talked about these numbers during our Great Reset's Already Happened stream and during our What Becomes of the Zoomer stream. So we won't talk about them. Basically, 40% of births in Britain are to somebody who has one parent who was born outside the UK.
Is this the one you were going to grab some polling data off of, or is it the next
one? This is the next one. This is just staggering. I just wanted to go over, here are the facts about public opinion on immigration. I know that AA did a very good video quite a while ago that I keep recommending to people. I'm not sure if it's behind a paywall or not. It's called Public Opinion Doesn't Matter, and it's very, very good. But this is from the Council on Migration. It features a lot of kind of Ipsos Mori numbers. And there's two extremely kind of operative charts here. Table one, I'll get the quick insert up because it's a bit easier to read. But yeah, the polling data on immigration is extraordinary. Throughout the Blair years, opposition started strong and then became even stronger, especially among younger and the skilled working class. By 2008, there was not a single age or income segment of the United Kingdom that was not at least 60% against mass migration, especially those who are working class. We see it here. There are some sections in 1999, the 15 to 29-year-olds, you expect them to be more pro-immigration because they're younger and they're in education.
1999, Britain was such a different country.
Demographically, yes. Yes. Huge, huge difference between that and, say, even 2005.
Well, the one that I see there is the C1, C2 social class groups.
Yeah.
That actually is the tracking of those people going from Labour voters to Tory voters across that period.
Yes. Yes, it is. This is kind of why you ended up with the outgrowth, which was the whole red wall crumbling thing.
It also means that, at least according to this, 3/4 of everyone who's a plumber, carpenter, or sparky in Britain does not like immigrants.
Well, it's just percent of people who agree Britain has too many immigrants. It's not really a comment about immigration levels. It's about the existing levels.
Yeah.
This is effectively people who are signalling they are pro-deportations.
Yes.
Not just talking about, you know, levels coming in. This is people who think, who thought in 2008 that there was already too many here, and people who thought in 1999 there was already too many people here.
And here we are with now an extra 7 or 8 million having arrived since, at
yes.
the very least.
That's just arrived, yes. Again, the numbers as well as we move through time are quite staggering once we get to policy promises. So I'm going to go through, again, quite quickly, the policy promises of the Conservative government. I just find it so extraordinary that the 16 to 24 year olds in that image there, the big 23 point swing in
yes.
the amount of 16 to like, sorry, that's 15 to 29 year olds who think there are too many immigrants in Britain, which
is almost an extra 50% increase.
It is an incredible number. But anyway, anyone who tells you that the British people have ever been pro-immigration is just lying to you. Even by their own data, that stuff does not work, and it isn't true. Okay, here's the promises from the 2010 election from the David Cameron government. Tories would limit immigration to tens of thousands a year, says Cameron. Conservative leader says net migration of 200,000 people a year...
Too much.
...is too much.
Too much.
Too much. 200,000 people is too much. That's crisis levels. Tens of thousands. So that implies that 99,000 would be the absolute maximum number.
Is this not...
And this is also the fluffier, newer, pro-gay marriage, not nasty party Tory
is
party.
Is this not also possibly around about the same time that some of them were actually saying that there needs to be like an internal government inquiry
yes.
as to why this has happened?
Yes, there was a lot of talk of a government inquiry about that. So, tens of thousands. We now move to May 2023.
And look how the goalposts have
shifted. Look how this has shifted. So 200,000 is unacceptable. Rishi Sunak refuses to stick to Boris Johnson's pledge on bringing net migration below 250,000. So there's a pledge by Boris Johnson to bring it under 250k, which is 50,000 above the unacceptable Blair year levels, and this is not being stuck to. So Boris, David Cameron promised tens of thousands, Boris Johnson promised 250,000, and Rishi Sunak is promising to reduce net migration to less than 500. So we've gone from tens of thousands to 250,000 to 500,000 in 10 years.
It's all such nonsense.
Yes.
And then at the same time, we've got our friend from last week, Matt Goodwin, who was writing for Conservative Home the other week. If
yes.
you just look up Sensible on this. yes, there you go. The overall aim is to bring net migration into Britain down from over 600,000 a year closer to the 200,000 to 250,000 range that was recorded in 2019. Given recent studies suggest most voters would like to see net migration fall to 50,000 to 100,000 rounds. The numbers advocated by the New Conservatives, a group we'll come to at some point one day, might strike many voters as still too high, but I think these policies,
if phased in gradually,
are sensible and in line with the voters.
So we've had the nice, new, shiny, fluffy Conservative Party promise tens of thousands. They've had 1.4 million in a single year of that's granted visas. That's not even including people who are in limbo and people who are here illegally. And now we have supposedly one of the most hard-edged people in the Conservative Party, one of the faces of the far acceptable edge of the anti-SJW, saying that, well, the sensible number is about 100,000. There's no mentions of repatriations here. This is them haggling over numbers.
This is man of the far sharp vanguard fringe of the Conservative Party who's telling you that, you know, 100,000 is a sensible policy and that it must be done gradually. He must believe, deep down, that there are some reason why we need to be bringing in 1,600,000, you know, and like, why would it have to be gradual? Why couldn't you just close the borders overnight? What, Mr. Matt Goodwin, might you want to elaborate in your next Conservative Home article on why that's what the strategy needs to be? I noticed someone's making the point as well in chat that there's obviously the bait and switch here of gross migration and net migration.
Yeah.
You know, we're not even talking about the total number of people that actually just come in. We're talking about the total number of people that actually come in minus all the people that leave because they don't want to live in Britain anymore.
Yeah, they're talking about net migration. So that's a lower number. So it could be at this level. It could still be 500k people if 250k British people are emigrating.
Yes.
And that's been a huge story that a lot of the...
Not British people, but the Poles that don't want to live here anymore, the Romanians that don't want to live here anymore.
There's still about 50,000 like actually British people that leave a year.
Yeah, no.
Sometimes more than.
I understand that as well, but a lot of it is also... Because I think we can make a point to some extent that not all immigration is necessarily always the same.
No.
There is to some extent those who arrive from Northern or, you know, Eastern Central Europe that do come here, work, realise how many brown people there are, and then leave.
Yes.
And because of that, what you get is then this extra effect of the very worst of the immigration piling up here.
Well, I quickly also wanted to go over, sorry, I closed it when I shouldn't have done. There's two charts here that demonstrate how this has been allowed to happen, the dialectic. Let's have a look at this chart here from the migration policy of public concern over immigration. What happens? What happens in 2008 that knocks the immigration concerns that were at fever pitch? The BNP was winning, you know, winning council elections left and right, despite effectively being a prescribed organization.
Mm-hmm.
We see it drop off. Why does it drop off? Well, the financial crisis starts.
Yes.
The current thing shifts. People are bombarded with different worries, and suddenly people are voting on economics rather than immigration. And immigration in this period disappears from the headlines completely.
Yep.
If you were around at the time, you will remember, it was everywhere. The BNP was defeated, in quotes, i.e. they leaked the members list and sent people round to everyone's houses.
Well, I have seen Nick Griffin running around on Telegram quite blatantly saying, we all lost our bank accounts as part of being part of the BNP in the early 2000s. Where was Farage and his mates to stand for us then?
He was bragging about having destroyed the BNP.
Yes, of course.
But we have another one here as well. This is UK public opinion towards migration, overall attitudes and levels of concern. We see here the high watermarks. There's some very funny stuff here because the polling basically completely loses any coherence. As in, like, they just become random.
They start messing with the numbers, and which is the only reason we get any sort of downward.
But if you look at historic opposition to immigration, there's Ipsos 2007. Basically, it seems to be still at around about the same level, about 70%. But there's all of these
European social survey.
There's a lot of these which are completely bogus.
Look at the bottom section of note and sources, yeah. Britain election studies. Do you think that too many immigrants have been let into this country or not? Do you think that immigration has gone too far? How much do you agree or disagree with the following statement? There are too many immigrants. So this is one of the things that always gets me with the polling stuff, and it's something I'll actually come up later, is so much of what goes into doing these polls is about asking a very specific question.
Yes. So if there was all this historic, what is it, 1987, 76, 1979, 86, 85, basically, opposition to immigration in Britain has run consistently 70 to 85% throughout its entire history. And there's a huge amount of woolliness here, which is post hoc rationalisation. How did, with all this opposition, the immigrants start flowing in this period?
It sort of seals the deal that there is absolutely no way that you could argue either historically or currently that there is popular support and a mandate for immigration.
Here's figure three, which is, I don't know if people can...
Salience.
I don't know if people can really see this that well. But what it's saying is here, as Brexit, as the EU, European Common Market, Brexit becomes an issue, immigration craters.
Because all the discussion around immigration was centred around Brexit at the time and how we'll have to reapproach it and this, that,
and here's the financial crisis taking up the headlines. Here is people in 2015, 2016 beating the drum and being like, no more,
mm-hmm.
no more. And then the government suffers a surface level defeat.
There's an interesting one I see, though. I look at the orange line here.
Yeah.
Intense spike after 2001.
Yeah.
Right throughout to 2007. And again, totally just gets sidelined by the conversation on the economy. However,
it creeps back up.
Well, not just that it creeps back up. That during that period, it would seem immigration was actually the only issue so strongly held in the public conscience that it didn't completely hit the floor for that entire about 9-year period of double-dip recessions and this, that, and the next thing.
It has always been the major concern of about a baseline of about 30%, 25 to 30% of the population spiking up to 56%, 45% here. And that's as a headline issue. As salient, but this is a great example of what a disaster the Brexit dialectic was for any kind of serious discussion around immigration. I wanted to revisit something we've talked about before, but I don't know, I've got some notes here as well. It's look at the deflection points that we've just gone over and what emerges there. What emerges is that after decades of inaction on policy, that is one of the most universally despised aspects of British politics, is open borders. People have somewhat switched off, with the rest of the softening on immigration being displaced by other headline crises and the dramatic demographic decline of the UK from which the polling is drawn. Once again, see Great Reset has already happened. There might be a quote-unquote softening on immigration because the areas they are surveying are very have dramatically changed demographically because the people they are surveying are now immigrants. Britain's views are clear, and they have been for a very long time. There has never been a majority of people in favour of immigration. Anyone trying to haggle about public opinion on levels of immigration is your enemy or is just lying to you. But
how is this situation maintained while also retaining the false veneer of democracy? And this is where the conversation that we've had over the last few weeks comes in. Who defines what policy is? Well, we've been looking into the policy engines, and luckily, multiple things have breached into the news cycle that is a confluence of everything we are talking about. Firstly, we need to talk about the current framing of immigration debate within the mainstream right. Two important things have happened. Firstly, the focus on recorded illegal immigration, the small boats, and not visa numbers, you know, as we've just gone over. And secondly, a reframing of the debate from immigration to integration. These are important as reductions in legal numbers is removed from the debate entirely. These people have the right to be here, and we need to focus on making them to be able to fit in is now the tone of the discussion.
Yes, it is. There's the report here from Policy Exchange that we talked about when covering Policy Exchange and how pro-mass immigration, the supposedly headline conservative think tank is. Of course, I now guess slightly famously highlighted the fact that this is the think tank really that Calvin Robinson got all of his initial credibility from,
yes,
was the fact that he was a senior fellow at Policy Exchange. Policy Exchange, by the way, has taken money in the past, large amounts of money, more than $250,000 dollars from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We map all of that out in our stream about Policy Exchange in detail.
Which we would heavily recommend if you haven't already seen it. It was the total Tory removal stream, I believe.
But it's really just the tone of the way that integration is now talked about. This is just a report called What of a Hand to Integration. And really, it is a blueprint document for them trying to reframe the debate around immigration to being a debate about integration and us as a host population failing the immigrants.
Shall I just read through this bit here?
Yes, read up until not a question of them. I've cut a few bits out, but I'd actually read through it on the notes.
That's all right, I can see that one.
Okay, fair enough.
There are also green shoots of progress since 2016 that lend encouragement. While the response to the Casey review was anemic, the integration pilots showed real local results. Post-Brexit changes to immigration policy and the subsequent decline in hostility to immigration, that would be the decline in hostility that they've painted into the results through their polling data.
Yes.
Point towards the ability to progress on even the most contentious of policy issues. We'll have a brilliant example of this to close on this evening.
Yes.
And the schemes responding to refugees from Syria, Hong Kong, Afghanistan, and now Ukraine promise better integration outcomes. Finally, the levelling up debate has opened up discussions about social capital and social connection, and widened the discussion about integration to include arguments about geography, education, and class. Against these green shoots, the controversy around the Sewell report and the polarised reaction to BLM protests in 2020 showed how divisive debates about race can still be. Oh, I thought race wasn't real. That's a little odd one for them to throw in there. To seize the wider opportunity, we first need to accept that integration and wider community cohesion are inseparable. This needs to be framed as an everyone issue.
Becoming a minority.
Not a question of them and us. Secondly, it will require sustained political prioritisation at the highest levels. Given the nature of the barriers that have to be overcome, controversy, long timelines, cross-departmental working, low central and local government capacity, if this isn't a prime ministerial priority, it isn't a priority at all. Policy Exchange putting their hands up. The number one priority of the nation must be the elimination of homogenous British culture and the ethnicity. They must be replaced and mixed and integrated.
Here we go. Well, this leads us on to, I know a lot of you will have already seen the Tory MP saying we need to house immigrants in everyone's houses. Really, that is an outgrowth of what Policy Exchange and by extension the Tory party are saying here. They're talking about the sponsorship schemes. There was a lot of, let's say, positive reaction in quotes, which is just lack of negative reaction, from the resettlement schemes from Ukraine, because it was the current thing.
Yes.
There's a lot of talk in both this document and the document that grabbed all the headlines, which talked about putting immigrants in people's homes, about utilising current crises that people are already sympathetic to bring people directly from countries to our country without all the people in boats, basically gaggles of gormless-looking Somalis on the news stuff that puts people off. That's what they're saying here, that, look, we need to go to these people at source. We need to link it to a news narrative. Britain owes these people something.
We fucked up in Afghanistan. Therefore, we owe it to them to allow them to all arrive here. Which I think actually feeds into, again, another point that will come up in the latter document we'll be looking at as well.
There's another section I've here. Why integration matters. Remember, this is effectively a Conservative Party document we are reading here. And it's one that was published.
I'm going to
actually just zoom out a sec.
Yeah.
Because this is badly formatted. But this is one from 2021, I believe. So this is a relatively, I guess,
I think that says 2022 up in the...
Oh, does it, sorry?
Yeah.
It's in 2022
March
then.
March 2022.
So it's pre-kind of stop the boats narrative.
But it's also almost perfectly in time with some of the becoming a minority stuff.
Yes, it is. But to quote here, it has become traditional to see integration as about how the majority community integrates new or minority communities into it. There have been ongoing debates about both the best way of achieving this and whether the state should be ultimately aiming for assimilation, integration, or multicultural outcomes. Again, there's haggling here.
Well, see, I would posit that at some point within this paper they would have to put down what the difference between those three are, but I don't think anywhere they actually do.
No, they don't. In the past, this may have made sense. However, over the last 30 years, the nature of the challenge has shifted and grown. At its core, it is the reality that our social connections have dissipated across the whole of society. We are no longer facing a challenge of how a minority groups are integrated into majority connections because so many of those connections in the majority community have broken down.
Can I sort of interject there ever so slightly?
Yeah.
Because that sentence you've just read, or that section you've just read, is the reason why they choose to split assimilation and integration. If we think all the way back to the becoming a minority framework stuff, the problem with assimilation is that it came from what they referred to as like an imperialist or colonialist perspective, because you think as the host nation that your national identity is so supreme in your own sort of sovereign nation that anyone who comes into that nation must also comply with it.
So they're really telegraphing what's going to be in this latest report as well.
What they're saying for is, we are for integration.
Yes.
We are for ridding the nation of that culture and the expectation that people, when they arrive, adapt to it.
We are now faced instead with a dual challenge. Firstly, how do we...
two-way integration.
Yes. Firstly, how do we build community connections across our society as a whole? And secondly, how do we make sure these connections reflect the makeup of our society and contribute to a civic rather than ethnic identity? This wider challenge is bigger in both scope and nature. This whole section is incredible because they are basically saying, we have come in, we have destroyed white Britain, we have made the problem so bad that immigrants can no longer integrate into our communities because we do not have communities. And instead of looking around and going, how do we stop this? This has caused irreparable damage and there's no way to reverse it. They're going, how do we make this process bigger?
Yes.
How do we make this process wider? How do we take this process to its logical conclusion? How do we destroy things further so that nobody feels out of place because there's nothing to fit into?
Well, look again below the next paragraph. In 1971, 3 million people in the UK lived alone. Today, that number is closer to 8 million. 21% of people in England say they are sometimes, often, or always lonely. This effect of isolation are not marginal. If you're lonely, you have a 20... The isolation that they are talking about there is the exact same framework, again, from becoming a minority.
Yes.
That because you live in a community that isn't dense like a city and is ethnically homogenous, you are actually inhumane. You are doing a disservice to yourself because you're not exposing yourself to multiculturalism, and you're also doing a disservice to the immigrants because you're not welcoming them in.
I would like to have this paragraph framed somewhere.
What I would like to do actually is take that paragraph, print it out, read it out to people on the street, and ask them, where do they think this might have come from?
This sounds like something that I would write, but I'd write some very different paragraphs after it.
Well, again, though, it's the becoming a minority framework, but with very different slight language in it.
Yes, it's bizarre that they're saying this in a document about integration. This sounds like something from a document about mass repatriation, but anyway.
Or, I was thinking more so a document about how you describe the erosion of the nation state.
Yes.
And these things sometimes can go one and the same.
These are bits we've talked about before, but they're very salient because they really are the building blocks of what we saw explode into the news cycle, which is really... It's predicated on the stop the boats narrative. The stop the boats narrative is the current headline news cycle of Britain, in terms of immigration at least. It is the current thing in terms of borders. And as we described in our performative failure stream, it is meant to fail. They are talking about completely the wrong areas. We'll get into that a bit more in detail. But the rhetoric they are putting out is hard, but what is being focused on is small. It is specifically small boat crossings. It is not about the handing out of literally millions of visas in a single year. That reframing might sound like people wouldn't fall for it, but if you put enough effort into it and it is all you talk about, then people just naturally follow on.
Well, it's like very basic, like behavioral economics heuristics.
Yes.
You don't see the 100,000 people that arrive from X group and get dispersed across the country. But what you do see, and what I was actually going to suggest as well, what you see on a number of specific Telegram and Twitter pages whose whole focus is small boats, is footage and picture and picture and footage every day. 256 landed today on 14 boats. 500 landed today on 30 boats. Good weather today, there'll be a lot of boats. And it's a constant stream of that stuff. And that's been going for about 18 months now. I wonder to some extent how much of that is possibly influenced by the narrative they have wanted to create.
Possibly. It's funny seeing this essentially be mainstreamed from what was the migrant centre protests, which were completely subsumed by this narrative, by the way. And I hate to be, we called that, but we did kind of call that.
Yep.
We also called this, but this report is amazing.
And it's from our very good friend, Rakib. One of my favourite Mallard contributors.
Yes.
Rakib Eshan.
Rakib Eshan, yes.
Who, if anyone follows me on Twitter at the moment, will see the fact that I basically wake up every day, look at his tweets, and then bully him around for a few hours whilst summoning these bizarre sort of almost bot-like accounts on Twitter that go, no, you have to love our based brown people.
Well, for those of you who don't know, Rakib Eshan is, no one's quite sure. He was, up until recently, a very, very active member of the Henry Jackson Society. We did a dedicated stream on that. It has taken money from the security state, from the Home Office, from neocon warhawks. It was founded as a pro-Iraq war outfit.
It's also aligned with a large number of Zionist interest groups, which, of course, is good for us because we love the Nation of Israel.
We of course, do. But we commit ourselves to the Nation of Israel.
What I have found interesting is that absolutely nowhere in the discussion on this bill in the right-wing space, not the bill so much, but the paper that the bill is going to be based on,
yeah,
no one is talking about who Rakib Eshan is, where he's from, or what his job is.
Yes.
And if you go on his Twitter feed, I mean, just look at me and the stuff I've quote-tweeted, you know, off of him, I actually appear to be one of the only people who has actually pulled him up about this on Twitter and demanded some kind of answer off of him, which of course he refused to give, and he called me a racist.
Thank you for Melon. Thank you, Melon, for the two sets of $2, based and I love the Nation of Israel.
But he was, over the last, you know, previous week, absolutely everywhere in the papers, on GB News, talking about this policy document. And what I found interesting as well is when he was on GB News, they framed it as Rakib Eshan is on to talk about Policy Exchange's new report.
Yes.
Completely sort of ignoring the fact that he wrote it. And I also noticed that, what's the guy called? Charlie Peters, that does a lot of the independent journalism stuff that ends up on GB News, and he did the big grooming gang reports. He, of all people, was up there talking about Rakib Eshan's Policy Exchange document. Now, why, as an independent journalist, would you be discussing Tory policy documents, like, verbatim?
It's a bit odd to me, yes. Basically, what we're going to go through is the recommendations that are contained in this document. Not in full, but there are some very, very key areas which we need to go through. I don't know if you want to read these first two paragraphs, because these are very, very salient. This is from Section 7 Recommendations. This is written by, like I said, Rakib Eshan. We'll get onto some of the coverage later. There's a foreword by the Right Honourable Sir Brandon Lewis, CBE MP.
Who was the man that seemed to take the hit for this in media.
Yes, it is. There's an About the Author page, academic. He doesn't mention the Henry Jackson Society there, even though that is the mainline place that he has worked.
That's where he got his popularity from. He was nobody before that. I think there's also a Matt Goodwin reference somewhere in the towards the early section of this as well, but that's a story for a different day. We'll go back to the...
Basically, the ministerial foreword, we're not reading it because it's waffle.
Mm.
It's ministerial waffle about stop the boats, but also manage to be compassionate, talking about Hong Kong, you know, India, we shouldn't be taking in Albanians, blah, blah, blah.
Safe and legal routes.
Safe and legal routes, all of that. The real meat of this, as I said, is contained in the recommendations section, which is here. Let me make sure that it's not being cut off. It isn't. That's good.
There is a compromise which can be struck over the UK's asylum policy, one which is in keeping with the UK's rich history of rehoming some of the world's most persecuted peoples. Never again.
Never.
Whilst adopting a hard-headed approach over matters of public security and social cohesion, the UK should take pride in its response to the Kremlin's military invasion of neighbouring Ukraine. As of 15th November 2022, a total of 199,500 applications have been approved. They can't even spell it right. Have been approved across the two Ukraine visa schemes created in response to the conflict. 141,600 under the Ukraine sponsorship scheme, and a further 57,900 under the Ukraine family scheme. Do we want to discuss the sponsorship point here, or
talk to it when we get to it? There's a dedicated bit here.
Since the launch of the British National Overseas Route for Hong Kongers at the start of 2021 in response to the totalitarian national security law introduced by the Chinese communist regime.
You can already see it here as the linking to headline humanitarian events. Go on.
154,000 eligible individuals and their dependents, 154,000 and their dependents have been granted their visa to start afresh with their lives in the UK. Over 350,000 Ukrainians and Hong Kongers fleeing the Kremlin's militaristic aggression and Chinese state tyranny respectively have been provided with sanctuary in the UK. I just want to mention as well, and it's a point we'll get to.
Why are we short of? We let 500,000 people arrive in a matter of months. Why are we short of housing?
Yeah. There is a geopolitics angle to this, and it's one we'll get to towards the end. Yeah. The UK's capacity to help those at immediate risk of conflict-related violence and political persecution, however, is being undermined by the ongoing small boats emergency. We can't take in hundreds of thousands of people from Ukraine because we're too busy dealing with the boats.
Again, as we'll get into it, this is a report that was received nominally positively by the UK right-wing press because it pretended to be something it wasn't.
Yep. This has seen its dysfunctional asylum system being reduced to a survival of the fittest arrangement, which sees largely young, able-bodied men arriving to the UK with the assistance of profiteering people smugglers combined with an internal dispersal system that often rehomes newcomers in oft under-regulated accommodation across deprived inner-city areas and post-industrial towns, fails spectacularly in delivering this inclusive compromise. I want to note as well that the brief interaction I had with the author of this document, the response he said to me was quite literally, we need to put more migrants in affluent and cosmopolitan areas to own the libs.
That's what he says in here as well.
Yes.
But that's what he's saying. He's trying to turn it into a shouting contest about where the migrants go in the UK rather than whether they should be here at all.
Yeah, of course.
There's several layers of reframing, as we'll get to.
It is worth noting that it does not benefit genuine asylum seekers who have fled violence and persecution to then wait on an asylum application for a considerable period whilst being potentially rehomed in a deprived local authority with limited resources for the services they require. To help pave the path towards an asylum policy agenda which is both compassionate and controlled, this report makes the following recommendations.
I'll go over these quickly because I've got quite a lot to say about each of them, but I'll let you, again, we'll kind of go back and forth so our mouths don't get too dry, but there is some red meat in here. The first point is curbing the power of judicial interventions in immigration and asylum policy. The thing is that this only interacts with the repatriation cases. We saw that of the 3,000 approved, only 300 were even pursued.
Yes.
So judicial intervention is not stopping migration policy. It's stopping deportations at the sharp end. It's gumming up the process when it gets that far. But unless someone is already refused asylum or refused entry to the UK in some capacity, really, judges have not much to say about it. They've intervened to help them, you know, get mobile phone access and very, very silly things like that. But that really is an outgrowth of the law that the Conservatives have written themselves.
Well, this is no one wants to actually touch the legal issue of whether or not these people should be here.
No.
It's anything they can do to squash the issue and reframe it through a human rights problem or an economics problem, or a class problem, because it's really...
Or a law problem.
Yes.
The problem is, and it always has been, that they should not be here. They came here and so they can leave. That is the problem. But it's being talked about as a judicial issue here, which it is in some senses, but it is also just not. And it is also not something they can pass the buck onto the judiciary for, because that really seems to be the play here. I also worry as well that removing judicial oversight might also mean that they can have a much more lax immigration system if they wanted to, which is a different thing. Prioritization of women and girls under a Parliament-agreed annual cap on refugees. It is just what it says. Basically, all of the proposals in here are based around going in at source and picking up entire communities and transplanting them to the UK. And it is kind of a haggling of, they have obviously seen the talking points from people like the Stop the Boats, like all of the the kind of the Kent Coast people about fighting age men. And they've tried to reverse it and say, well, if we can keep the numbers the same, but make it families instead, is that more palatable? They're trying a different angle with that. So they've said, you know, curbing judicial power won't stop any, it won't stop people handing out 1.4 million visas. And prioritization of women and girls won't change the numbers, it'll simply change the
mathematics. That would change the numbers, because you would end up with more.
It won't change the numbers, but it will change the numbers in future, as it also means you are importing a breeding population. An expansion of Ukrainian-style sponsorship schemes to other nationalities. Here's where we get to the real meat of it. I'm going to read this one.
Yeah.
The current asylum system is not only too expensive, but also too statist.
Libertarians in control.
The key to better sharing the load with wealthier parts of progressive liberal Britain. That's him saying, bus them to the rich areas.
It's like Ricky Besant basically once a day makes a tweet that's like, well, the left are evil because they know that Britain is the most impartial anti-discrimination country on the planet.
I'll quickly have a look for your little interaction there. But basically, yes, there wasn't.
You've double searched his.
Oh no! Anyway, I won't look at that then. I won't waste time. But again, this was reported in the British press, basically uncritically. We'll get to that in a sec. But relatively pro-refugee areas, which tend to have higher housing costs, is galvanizing voluntary spirit. The Homes for Ukraine scheme has been described by the UK government as a significant success, the total of blah, 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 blah visas. With the asylum backlog at the end of 2012 standing at 166,000 people, the UK government should explore the possibility of expanding the Ukraine-style sponsorship model for asylum seekers and to other nationalities.
With the UK being a multi-ethnic success story.
Yeah, because we have cricket riots between Indians and Pakistanis. That's some of it. Anyway, there are now well-settled families and established communities of Afghan, Iranian, Iraqi, and Syrian origin with specific cultural assets that could help with the rehoming of asylum seekers and aid refugee integration. Basically, they're going to use the previous wave to try and house the last wave, which is ambitious, but charities such as Refugees at Home, along with organizations such as the Afghanistan and Central Asian Association, Iranian Association, blah, 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 could play important roles in a wider refugee and asylum voluntary model to coordinate, coordinated by the government. So it's not a voluntary, it's
coordinated by, that's different. I mean, the thing for me is, I think that is an unbelievable suggestion.
Oh, it is,
yes. I've sort of got it here.
Yeah.
There is a possible framing here that legal migration through sponsorship by philanthropists becomes the gateway to privatizing mass mobilization of third worlders.
Yes.
Taking it out of the government's hands. He's already said he doesn't want the judiciary touching it. He wants it being private and state or non-statist.
Yes.
And this obviously directly connects to the Circle housing scheme, who have already said that they will help, you know, put as many migrants into homes as they can, and have essentially asked otherwise private landlords who don't have people in their properties at the moment, send your property to Serco, they'll guarantee you a rate, and they'll handle all the service and stuff, and we'll just put migrants in it.
Well, they're basically, skimming here, there's a little bit here in the middle of the document where he talks about the statutory duty to provide accommodation for asylum seekers who do not have the means to obtain it themselves or cannot meet the essential living needs. That's a statutory requirement. And he's not disagreeing with that here. Basically, what he's doing is he's talking about the fact that, we're all in the north of England. Fucking six of these local authorities, Manchester, Bolton, Rochdale, Nottingham, Leicester, and Swansea, had a median national annual income that positioned them in the poorest quarter. He's basically just talking about the fact that the poor areas get all the migrants dumped on them.
Go back to the recommendation section where you were at before. The point where we're on.
Quickly getting back there, give me a sec.
One, there is the thing we can argue here that much in the same way that we discussed last week, where the government used migrants to prototype digital ID schemes, this could also just as easily be them using asylum seekers, or migrants, or whatever they want to call them, to pilot and prototype housing sort of guarantee schemes. But you see, the mention here of charities.
Yeah.
Let's say, scroll down a second, that you've got your Central Asian Association or your Iranian Association. We already know there are millions and millions of pounds that flow into this country from somewhere like Qatar or anywhere else in the UAE through mosques.
Yes.
And they have massive charities and they have massive foundations and they have quite an sort of intense effect upon the localities they live in when they have that money to throw around. Now, these people, say, apply for charity status and then start a sponsorship scheme with their own nationality. There is now a private route for, say, people from Qatar to come here as sponsored asylum seekers because their own government on one end says, you're a political terrorist, you've got to run to the UK. Yeah. Meanwhile, the same government at the other end provides the housing and the money to engage with the sponsorship scheme. Well, I mean, it's almost perfect.
I also, we're going to do another stream on this, because we don't have time to cover the full implications of this scheme now, because there's so many of them. We don't have time to talk about how it interlocks with things like Serco. Don't worry, we will be doing that. There will be a follow-up probably next week, probably a Wednesday stream about the Infinite Migrant Camp. But what this recommendation is a way of creating a private sector, in quotes, immigration system in which the government can shift off hundreds of thousands of people.
It just washes its hands of it and says it's not up to us.
Anyone in Britain who wants to bring in an immigrant can do so, and they will be seen as heroes for alleviating the financial burden. And that's what a lot of this is predicated
formalizing something that the Open Society by George Soros has done for two decades.
Yes, it would. It goes without saying that this would be a buffet for well-funded NGOs.
Yes.
In which well-funded NGOs could buy up large parts of this country and turn it into immigrant housing overnight and would be applauded by the likes of Akib.
Are you going to go through more?
I'm just saying there's a bit more red meat here. The extension to prevent you to the sphere of immigration and asylum and a fairer internal distribution of asylum seekers. This is really the busing migrants to rich towns to own the libs.
Yes.
That's what this is. That's all this is. It talks about council scores, NHS, local services, blah, blah, blah. They talk about making the distribution fairer rather than reducing the numbers. So that's the focus in that area. And the last point here is an official establishment of asylum support and refugee integration strategy for Northern Ireland, basically formalizing Northern Ireland's status as a fellow refugee dumping ground. Because they didn't used to do it because of, you know, all the troubles.
Yes.
But they've started just dumping them in Northern Ireland.
Can we quickly jump to page 47 in this for a point, 47, yes. Not 27.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember if it's 47 in the document or not, to be totally honest.
Is it?
I tell you what, actually, just, I've put in the notes under where you've got the bullet points. It's just that line there.
Okay, I'll put up the dead air. It's not page. Oh, just paper.
Sorry, that's the section I was looking for. Yeah, in this section, he's talking about ever since the Rwanda thing.
Yeah.
He's talking about, however, it also specifies a particular instance where the threshold of serious and irreversible harm would not be met, which include cases where the standard of healthcare available in the destination country is lower than the care and treatment which is available in the UK. The threshold would also not be met in cases where a person can seek state protections in the event of persecution. This would include countries that have clear constitutional provisions, clear constitutional provisions which explicitly prohibit discrimination on the grounds of ethnicity, religion, and language. Now, to me, straight away, that is them saying this is cause for war. Because we know as soon as they say that a country is inhumane or discriminatory and it does not follow the GAE liberal framework, there was cause to invade it. And I could actually see them arguing like, well, of course we could deport everyone back to Iran and Afghanistan, but they'd have to be liberal democratic states first. So it's the ultimate containment operation, is you turn everyone who wants to stop immigration into a war hawk. So they support endless foreign wars, so that at some point when we do create the global liberal world order, then we can deport all the brown people back to the countries they were from.
Well, again, this is the solution posited by the Conservative Party, who has been the party of high immigration, low deportation. I've just gotten Sunak actually basically put himself on a blue screen, which makes him very
easy,
very memeable. But yeah, I'll be returning to that one as a bit of a meme as we go through it. But there are some very important points when picking through this document, because again, we'll get to it in a sec about how it was reported, but large parts of the British press and the social media sphere reported this uncritically and pretended this was just a normal document saying that immigration is bad, rather than actually reading it and figuring out that it was just a blueprint for further immigration. And it is a blueprint for all of the things that the Conservative government is selling with the small boats bill and the small boats in quotes agenda. Its red meat focuses on the tiny number of people who have their asylum claims rejected and that they are already not pursuing, and the rest of it is about the expansion of the UK asylum system. We see it here. There's a laser focus on small boats to look at the 40k and not the 1.4 million. This report has nothing to say on the 1.4 million visas issued in 2022, apart from that they were a good thing and a model to follow. Yes. It has nothing negative to say.
The UK is a multi-ethnic success, yeah. Don't you know?
Focus on the fairness of costs of housing immigrants and who is responsible for them, rather than if they should be in the first place. A fairer internal distribution of asylum seekers. Eshan himself has argued this is a win somehow, that importing people to own the libs is now virtuous. There's a much tighter focus on integration and social cohesion rather than the reductions in immigration itself. And it does not discuss repatriations outside of the insane performative failure of the Rwanda plan. It has the headline-grabbing section about using people's private residences and the expansion of the sponsorship scheme. And it's mentioned as progress in the previous policy exchange report in terms of reducing people's animosity towards mass immigration. It's about reframing it as a response to
if
conflict.
If we go all the way back to the right response document written by Matt Goodwin in 2011, it's what he argued too.
Yes, it
that
is.
If you just force native Brits to live with brown people in tight proximity for long enough, they might no longer be racist.
Headline grabbing section, yeah, it was what was reported in many places, but the rest of it was left by the wayside. It discusses the sane and normal operation of the immigration system, apparently, which is allowing 350,000 people in response to conflict to come to the UK in a single year, a success story. And again, it has been discussed in these kind of sane and normal terms by the rest of the talking heads. You said there's also a possible framing here about legal migration through sponsorship. Philanthropists become the gateway to privatising mass mobilisation of third worlders, taking it out of government's hands in a sense. It does have a connection to the circular housing scheme, which we will finally be kind of wrapping up when we next cover this. And it's a prototyping of housing provisions in a similar vein to the government's prototyping of digital ID with migrants. As we said in the What Becomes of the Zoomer stream and the Great Reset has already happened stream, you will no longer choose a home in the future. You will be housed.
Yes.
And that is very much a Soviet model of housing, but that's just kind of where we are. We talked about... Page 47 there. A classic piece of debate reframing from a pro-immigration party. And again, to return to who Raqib Eshan is and who his friends are as well, and who the people who have reported on this as normal, here's Matt Goodwin. We talked about his work with Chatham House when we talked about our total Tory removal. But does this sound like a reaction to the document that we just read by someone who is supposedly a hard-edged conservative?
Need I even say, quite the statistic, UK government is now spending at least $2.2 billion a year housing refugees and illegal immigrants in hotels, which is more than the latest fund for levelling up left behind regions in the UK and more than three times the fund for tackling homelessness in the UK. Now, as you've...
Policy exchange.
As we tried to work out, that £2.2 billion relates to no more than 20,000 migrants. What about the other 1.1 something million migrants, Matt?
Well, it's also just an endorsement of this report.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a direct endorsement, but it's a tacit endorsement. I don't know how you can read this report and not be utterly incensed.
I don't see him countering the integration narrative that's put forward in the report anywhere, do you?
No, I don't. All I see is uncritical acceptance of much wider immigration than we even see now. Here's Dr. Raqib Eshan, our old friend.
I'm just clicking his profile for a second. What heinous stuff has he tweeted there that I missed today? stuff about bloody Farage nonsense.
Yeah.
I thought that tweet was particularly hateful. Welcome to 2023 Britain, where the leading British figure who is eager for the introduction of cultural and legal changes to the banking industry is a former city trader who is a self-declared Thatcherite. The modern left has let itself down.
Very funny. But again, he's being posited as somebody who has written a report about tackling immigration. A hard line tackling immigration report. And we've just read the recommendations, which is far more immigration.
Fire hose them into everywhere across the country.
Cut out entire countries and stick them in Britain.
Actually forget about having a legal structure around immigration. Just allow foreign charities in the UK to import as many people as they want. Oh, it's Tory Deputy Chairman Lee Anderson speaking
this
at the
headline
launch of
is
the New Conservatives group.
This headline has changed. That's weird. That's bizarre. I don't think that was actually the article I put in here. Tories demand Rishi Sunak start. Yeah, this is the same guy who was the...
Well, at least in the web address at top for people who can't see, it does say Tories demand Rishi Sunak stop.
Yeah.
That's, so they've
changed the headline, yeah. Sorry, I'm just unfamiliar with that. But MP want to block overseas work from the UK care homes, an extreme immigration plan. But this is, again... Tony Secretary Anderson will speak at launch of the new Conservatives group. I think that might be the wrong link, I'm afraid. I was actually looking for the...
Well, no, because the...
Yeah.
The link at the top is the right one for the one that's in the document, though, so...
Oh, right.
They have literally just changed the title.
Hmm. Good old-fashioned modern journalism there. But, yeah, the person who did the foreword of this report, who was Sir Brandon Lewis, sorry... because there is, I need to find it actually. There was a bit of news, yeah. Brandon Lewis backs report asking people to open homes to asylum seekers. There was quite a lot of, yeah. Express with his hit out at Brandon Lewis over out of touch migration crisis solution.
But
Brandon
it's not
Lewis
his solution.
Call for Britain to welcome Channel migrants into their homes has been rejected by the staggering 98% of Express readers. So they're talking about the expansion of the UK. Ukraine scheme to basically all immigrants.
Is either Policy Exchange or Ricky Bessan mentioned this article anywhere?
Yeah. Oh god, we've been on that screen for ages. My apologies, guys. We've been on the wrong screen. But yeah, there we go. I opened the wrong thing there anyway. But this is them talking about Sir Brandon Lewis, who didn't write the report. Ricky Bessan did. God, it's embarrassing, but this is how it was reported in the press. It's, you know, Tory MP wants you to open your home to migrants. The rest of it wasn't talked about. Policy Exchange wasn't really talked about, and certainly Rakib Eshan wasn't talked about.
Well, no, but the line of stop the boats,
yeah,
the line of integration hasn't. What they've done is they've had him say the thing that we all know is going to come out of this,
yeah,
and then they've poo-pooed that part whilst actually still putting in the legislation that'll allow it to happen.
Again, sorry for it didn't appear on screen earlier, but here's the Matt Goodwin tweet with him basically uncritically accepting it. And here is Rakib Eshan writing in Telegraph,
we have had
basically
that
being allowed to say that this is an anti-immigration report whilst it isn't.
But anyway, there is another aging Tory dinosaur out there that seems to, much in the same way that he did with Tony Blair and digital ID stuff, essentially commit like sort of late career seppuku to sure that these things make it through.
This is the second event that kind of prove what we were saying about all of these former headline leaders of the Tory party who have now come out and said that actually what has happened over the past 10 years has been a very good thing, what Labour did was a good thing. And we need to keep it going.
Let's not forget as well that William Hague is one of the people that was present around pre-2010 shift of the Conservative Party around David Cameron that was, let's be progressive, let's be pro-immigration.
Well, this is called Even Right-Wingers. We need migrants. I'll let you read the bits you picked out here.
Yeah.
But
I don't know if you want to just kind of find them as I go.
I will quickly get them in here, yes.
This is like the one part we actually tell the truth here. Here in Britain, migration played a key part in the vote to leave the EU. Although immigration expanded by people fleeing Ukraine, departing Hong Kong, seeking education, and staffing our health service is higher now than it was then. This is him, again, highlighting and continuing to normalise this idea of new legal routes. He then goes on to say somewhere else, yet the response from the right.
Yep.
I was going to say you might want to find the next section.
Oh, no, sorry.
I just picked them out as I went. Yet the response from the right cannot be so simple as preventing immigration.
There we go.
Because the second clear conclusion from population forecasts is that the need of European countries for migrants is inescapable. What yes. an evil fucking man.
Yeah, what an evil man. That is just plain up evil. What is just a plain up evil thing to say?
Anyway, we'll continue. I just picked that out because I read that through and thought, no, I can't not pass that on to people. It continues on here, but again, this New Conservatives group.
Yeah.
New Conservatives, Lee Anderson and his mates. The only way they could arrive at a plan to reduce numbers to about a quarter of a million a year.
Here's that number again.
Was to stop visas being granted for care workers. But this would immediately produce an intensified crisis in social care. They also wanted a drastic reduction in student visas, but that would devastate the income of our universities. And he's right. The systems nowadays are predicated on a massive influx of foreigners. Haig is right to suggest that the gap in care workers can't be filled, because his very party has helped to oversee the continuation of a native culture that decries the idea of women and service at the home. So we had to import West Africans to do it.
Yeah, the breakdown of the multi-generational household, the breakdown of community links, the absolute pittance that is carers' allowances, things like that. The drastic breakdown of the fabric of Britain is what has caused this to be quote-unquote necessary. And also just the over-reliance on cheap immigrant labour since 1997.
But he is the man that has overseen the last, you know, near... Sorry, the next one I'm going to read is just a paragraph down.
Yeah.
But he's the man that has overseen, you know, nearly 15 years of Tory rule that has allowed this all to happen. And then he goes on to say, left and right in Britain and across Europe need to move on from long-established attitudes unless migration is to dominate and poison political debate. Migration is settled.
Yeah.
It is beyond politics. There can be no debate.
This is William Hague, who, like we said, came out recently with Tony Blair to say that digital ID is a settled issue.
Yes.
And there can be no debate.
Oh, he's just, sorry, he goes on to say that later on in here anyway.
Yeah.
Then there's one last one as well, before the two paragraphs at the end.
There it is.
Yeah, just leave it there.
Yeah.
For unless some such policy works, a future government will be driven to withdraw from the international legal frameworks such as the European Convention on Human Rights. In addition, for any government, the introduction of a digital identity system should be part of clarifying the right of an individual to live and work here.
What? Again, what an evil man.
And then just the last two paragraphs.
Really. Yeah.
Yes. If the future is one of continuing...
So we got digital ID there. You managed to crowbar that in.
No, I know. He just slips that in there. If the future is one of continuing high levels of immigration, what do you mean if you have already told us that there has to be?
Yeah. The age of migration.
The promotion of shared identity becomes even more important. Britain has done better on this than many of our neighbours. Look at how many of our political leaders are children of immigrants. But we should not be complacent. The coming age of migration is another reason to ensure citizenship carries obligations as well as rights. Labour's David Lammy put it well in advocating compulsory national service to break down the divides that are becoming entrenched in modern society. Such proposals for integration will be important. The age of migration is upon us. Political ideas need to be updated for it if deep polarisation and division are to be averted. This is the byline followed by Goodwin, by Eshan, by everyone at Policy Exchange and Henry Jackson, yes, when they all talk about integration.
It's just that this is only the start of the age of migration.
And the continuing elevation of ethnic minorities and a focus on a common identity. These are all measures to kill any last remnants of racial consciousness within native Brits. Resistance is futile. You will be replaced. That is the Uniparty line.
Yeah. Irving Spengler asking about that. Yeah, they're actually gonna do the whole bring back national service thing, but instead of, you know, national service in the old sense, it'll be you will be put in a weird like integration struggle session camp with a migrant.
Yes, actually, like Maoist re-education camps that they call bloody national service.
But yes, AA did go over this in the stream. That's why we didn't want to just focus on this. We tried to bring a lot into it here. But the last part of the puzzle, really, is this constant relaxing of the visa system. It is the backdrop of the just stop the boats, or whatever it is. Just stop boats.
Just stop boats. Yes, that's what we need. We need our own NGO that run around in orange t-shirts. Boats. I tell you what, I'd throw bloody more than orange paint on the policy exchange doors, I'll tell you that.
The last part of this kind of conservative immigration policy trap narrative is the fact that we can no longer maintain certain industries without unlimited immigration. There is the construction industry, which, again, became over-reliant on cheap labour and also just has a general skill shortage worldwide. We've been over the fact that this is not an immigration problem. It is a skills problem and will continue to be a skills problem. And anyone who worked on a work site during kind of the boom years of the Polish plumber knows that basically all of those people were manual labourers of zero skill, and a lot of time and money was wasted redoing what they didn't do correctly. In fact, the influx of unskilled Romanians, Bulgarians and Polish was a disaster for UK worksites and resulted in a huge amount of lost material, lost work and just shit buildings. They are not skilled. If they were skilled, they wouldn't need to come here. How European baristas and au pairs could return to Britain under a government scheme. Basically, they're saying that there's a barista shortage, which is not true, because anyone I've known who's tried to go for any kind of menial job in the last 3 years, and they're British, has been turned down. Like, it's a universal thing. You cannot get a starter job in this country. It is impossible.
The NGO needs to be called Just Stop.
Yeah, Just Stop.
Just Stop.
Again, so we've already got two schemes. Baristas, restaurant workers, the catering section, and the construction industry. The big one as well has been fruit pickers. I'm not bringing that one up. That was a little while ago. But there's infinite numbers of these professions. Care home workers is another big one. We talked about that. I'll mentioned it there. So we've got care home workers, fruit pickers. We've got baristas, and we've got construction workers.
Irving Spengler, no berry pickers. Cabbage choppers. Gosh. Berry picking's my job. That's why I'm long.
So we're already having all of these exceptions to the point that a lot of the, you know, Remain FBP people are going, ha, see, you needed the migrants. They're bringing the migrants back. But here's the other side of the debate. Here's how we've been talking, really. Again, everything we've talked about through all of these streams has been rhetoric from the supposed right. This is the right-wing perspective on immigration, or at least supposedly. Yusuf and Sunak, politics is making progress, but society must catch up. A truly equitable company is still some way off despite recent successes at the very top. This is basically The Guardian celebrating the fact that Hamza Yusuf and Rishi Sunak are two of the most visible politicians at the moment.
I recognise Sundar Katwala's name there, the writer of this, because he was mentioned on a Rakib Ehsan thing. I just thought for a brief second, I'll have a look at his... Wikipedia, British writer and thinker of Indian and Irish heritage. He's the director of British Future, UK-based think tank.
Yes,
British and Future. Former general secretary of the Fabian Society.
Yes.
I didn't actually think the Fabian Society let brown people in. I thought that would be like old school lefty racist.
Nope. Sundar Katwala, who wrote this article, is just the former head of the Fabian Society. So...
British Future, which also addresses issues of migration and opportunity, launched in January 2012. The think tank's call for the adoption of an English national anthem backed by MPs from different political parties won the support of David Cameron, according to reports on the website Conservative Home. It's all just a big Gordian knot.
Oh, dear me. But this is then basically going on to say that Barack Obama, US president, integration, racism, they're basically saying, look, you're ruled by brown people, but British people, we know British people still don't like brown people. So we're just going to keep going.
While national politics has set the pace, there should be There should be pressure to emulate, sorry, I'm going to go back up there actually. Asian and black politicians can choose to be bridgers or culture warriors in the media and politics just as their white colleagues can. So whether diversity leads to policy change depends on the choices made by governments. I think that choice was already made. Yeah. There should be pressure to emulate that elsewhere, and he's talking about politics yeah. to set the pace. How can newsrooms and lobby journalists keep pace with the ethnic diversity of the Commons? Despite a succession of ethnic minority chancellors, no FTSE 100 firm has yet promoted a British-born ethnic minority employee to the top job. Progress in politics sits in stark contrast to what Louise Casey's review of Met Police shows about how badly policing has got stuck. The charity sector too lags behind, struggling to turn anxious conversations about diversity deficits into action to address them. Every institution of economic and cultural power must find more confidence about how to make the increasing diversity of Britain an everyday norm at all levels. It should not just be politics leading this race to the top. Jeez, oh. But I think we can cap it off with a short thread I did on an Institute for Government document that yeah. you sent me the other day.
Yeah.
Now, they've done gay marriage, they put it through, and now they get to brag about it. And I want to read through the sort of set of posts here and think about how they talk about immigration now and how they're going to continue to talk about immigration in the future, seeing as how the document they're basing all new policy on, written by Rakib Ehsan, a man himself of immigrant origin, at least on some level of his descendancy, is already saying that the act itself of immigration is a given and is beyond politics, as is William Hague.
Yes.
So here's the Institute for Government, the Blairite think tank, saying basically what he's been banging on about for years. If you just scroll down to the bit of text I've actually got on there.
Yeah, page, yeah, yeah.
Same-sex marriage legislation shows that policy can lead public opinion.
Quite amazing.
But I thought democracy was public opinion leading policy. Same-sex marriage legislation passed 10 years ago today was a masterclass in building consensus for a contentious policy.
Yes. They're just congratulating. Again, power wants to be seen.
We'll go to the click one image then on to the next here.
Yeah.
They're talking about, you know, listening, responding to stakeholders over a long period.
Assuage sceptical groups. Basically, they're talking about nudge stuff there.
I was going to go through the whole thing.
Okay, right. Go ahead.
We're just committed to passing same-sex marriage legislation in a way that would be acceptable to those from religious organisations who opposed the policy. The government held conversations with stakeholders, both supporting and opposing it, at every stage of the policy process. This included designing the questions in the public consultation, deciding how the government would respond, and then how it would implement legislation. And then what is the response, of course? To assuage more sceptical religious groups, the government planned to solely introduce civil same-sex marriages. Religious ceremonies remain unchanged. However, in the consultation, it became clear that some religious organisations, like the Quakers, liberal Jews and Unitarians, wanted to perform same-sex marriage ceremonies.
So it's the again, it is the slippery slope, it's the boy and the frog.
Well, that's what the last point they got yeah. to say is. Same-sex marriage is now a stable and celebrated important part of Britain's law, institutions and culture. This was an opportunity for government to lead and public opinion to follow. It worked because the government was able to build on recent progress, most notably civil partnerships, but also because government chose to initially meet public attitudes and make a compromise which facilitated long-term change. 10 years on, the success of the legislation remains a powerful lesson for policymakers. The slippery slope is real, and that's a good thing.
Again, this is how in 10 years' time open borders will be presented to people.
It is likely we will see this sort of framing around immigration in the near future as the combination of decline, narrative manipulation and ritual humiliation continue. The story will retroactively be manufactured to tell us of how the great progressive leaders of the 21st century did away with the evil traditions of monoethnic societies and convinced the global populace at large that they always wanted immigration. EU-backed projects like Becoming a Minority is a sign of this coming directly to the fore, as is all the language in the policy exchange documents, which politicians across the floor will be repeating in no more than a few months' time, I would reckon.
All of this, though, is further evidence that the Conservative Party and anyone who is related to it is your enemy.
Yes.
All of them. There is nobody good anywhere near the Tory Party. I think we've conclusively shown that. This is what their policy documents look like. And when their policy is implemented, Blairite think tanks come out and say, well done, you managed to circumvent the basically public opinion. Here's why democracy doesn't exist, and that's why that's a good thing. It's a hilarious indictment of anyone who believes in the process, and it's a blueprint for how things will go moving forward. They will pretend to listen, they will do it anyway, it will become the law of the land, and you will either accept it or you will be shunned, and you will be pressured, and you will genuinely be made to suffer, not like the fake, weird suffering that's now going on in the headlines with Nigel Farage and his Coutts Bank account, which I'm very sceptical of. But again, the black pill dinner lady is in. I've got the image up there. But again, it's to look out for it. It's to disengage from the process. It's to not take any of these people and what they say at face value. If something seems to be catering to your biases but is using bizarre language you haven't heard about, research it. Because as we've shown with this policy exchange document, and as it is built on the previous rhetoric of the Conservative Party, they will just reframe things. They will create a anti-immigration report that is pro-immigration.
Yes. I mean, that's literally it. We have no other words really to say on this front other than that they have literally come up with anti-immigration policies that bolster immigration.
Yes. They have managed to come up with pro-immigration, anti-immigration bills. That's what the stop the boats bill is.
This is what we said about 2 or 3 weeks ago with the illegal migration bill is watch them open up all sorts of new legal routes.
And that's what's happened.
Watch them build it on the precedent of Afghanistan, on Ukraine, on Hong Kong. And as we've already talked about months ago on one of AA's streams,
yes,
the US government has already put out documents to say the cause of immigration into the US is the fact that certain Third World and South American countries like El Salvador,
yes,
that one that seems to be everywhere on Twitter every other week about how it's based.
Yeah.
The reason why we get immigrants from El Salvador is the government's a dictatorship. It's a very, very small leap, especially for the regime we have, to go from immigration is caused by inhumane governments, ergo to stop immigration, we must go and coup inhumane governments.
There is a threat of that throughout a large part of this. And also, if we go and coup unfriendly governments for women's rights, like in Afghanistan, we also need to accept the refugees from that conflict.
Yeah, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yes.
You go into the country and you totally turn it around into the liberal utopia and maybe they go back. Or because that's actually impossible and civilization is incommunicable, you invade the country, turn it in a shithole, well, and then put your hands up and say, sorry, we fucked up, we'll need to take
all Well, they the can't actually go back because they're all looking after the old people and serving coffee, apparently. One of these days, we're actually going to turn one of these countries around. And in fact, that's what's happened with Romania. Romania has turned the corner in some ways, and it has now looked around and realised that most of its people under the age of 30 are no longer in the country. I've spoken about it before, but having worked there previously on projects, they are labour starved. It is the biggest thing holding Romania back is the fact that it is part of the EU, it's been flooded with money, and now they've realised they have nobody who can utilise that money in like a physical building sense because everyone has been siphoned off by the rest of Europe. It has been a demographic collapse catastrophe in Romania and to an extent Poland, who are trying to desperately recover their diaspora. So we don't talk about it much because we are the host nation, we worry about ourselves, but all of this is also disastrous for the more developing countries. Yes, for the more developing countries that are capable, at least partially capable, of creating functioning states. It is a disaster on the other end as well. But quite frankly, that is not our problem. But it is still unfortunate. Anyway, thank you for watching. We have a lot more stuff coming forward. Look out tomorrow. I'll be doing a channel update video about how you can help us.
There'll probably also be a...
There will be a Substack piece going out. And this, yes, this will be going up on the Substack as an audio piece. And all of our research notes will also be available on the Substack. So do...
I was going to say, as a final mention, you can support us via the YouTube stuff, like the Super Stickers or the Super Chats. You can support us on Substack either monthly or as a one-time gift or as a six-month thing or a year thing. There's a few options on there.
Yes.
Or if you wish to use none of those and just give us a one-time donation, you can use the Ko-fi link, which I believe has been pinned in the chat.
Yes, it has.
Since the start of the stream. And also, if you give a donation on there of a certain level, we will also read it out. I know you sometimes keep an eye on your PayPal and the other stuff
I keep an eye on my phone as well to make sure I'm not actually missing any donations. I said I've also opened commissions if people just want silly memes or I'm trialing doing some custom research stuff for people. It's also just a good jumping off point. Some of you guys might have some great suggestions as well. But yeah, we've got quite a lot going on. But like I said, I won't shill too much because there will be kind of a dedicated update video about just about general stuff too. It won't just be about shilling. So do look out for that. We have quite a lot coming forward, a lot going on at the Substack. There'll be more Substack pieces that are written going up as videos here. So we have quite a large pipeline. A lot of you guys have stepped up and supported us on the Substack already.
Yes.
Basically, we went up by about like 7 or 8 paid subscribers, which is quite a lot, actually. That's good. There's quite a few people who've joined the channel. So you guys have been very supportive. So I want to thank people, really.
Very much so.
And part of why we want to put out more stuff for paid people already is to make sure that there's something there. Because most of you guys who've supported us so far have done so with basically no return, or at least very little return.
Well, I think the return has been the commitment we've made to providing good research and good content. It's somewhat polished, at least. But I think, other than that, if there's nothing else to be said, that's a good evening for me, and get your arse down to the pub.
Yes, have a good evening, and have a good night. Bye-bye.
Two, three. Send the buggers back. Oh, send the buggers back. These are the ones I wanted, so now I'm sending them straight back. I only wanted bad ones. You've sent us blue.